Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. Hello, I'm Nick, and welcome to the famous sloping pitch. Now, last week, I did it with Oldham fan Chris England, but sadly, Chris couldn't make it today, so instead we have Roger Moore with us, the late Roger Moore.
Yeah, no, I have a bit of a cold that makes me sound like Roger Moore, which amuses me.
Go on, do a line. I love it.
I'm writing a novel about Greek smugglers. Do you know any?
Oh, please, Nick. Now, obviously, Chris, I've kept an eye on Oldham, because I always do, and have done for the 40 years that I've known you. But for the girls and boys at home, maybe you could tell us how they're getting on.
Well, as you know, 30, 40, 50 years of supporting Oldham Athletic has made me a serial saluter of single magpies, a crazed avoider of cracks in the pavement, a constantly wary, wood-touching fate tempter. I even thought that saying on the podcast last week that Oldham were bottom of the league pile might somehow supernaturally prompt an uptick in fortunes, but no.
Nope.
We lost at home to Colchester.
We did.
And remain the only pointless team in Division 4, currently trading as League 2. So our 30-year quest to be the first team to go from the Premier League to the National League goes on.
Yeah, you could definitely do that. And I noticed this week that Southampton had beaten Newport away 8-0.
Yes.
And you lost to Newport, didn't you?
We did.
At home?
At home.
And the first game of the season.
That's right, an 88th minute demoralising winner.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
And on Saturday, I'm going to be at Sutton for their first home game. Oh, the heady days.
Yeah.
Their first home game on their new grass pitch, because they've dug up the 3G that they won promotion on. And there was a little piece in The Guardian that said that only four teams, Bradford, Northampton, Port Vale and Swindon, would complete the set of playing a competitive fixture against each of the other 91 by playing Sutton this season. But actually, we're going to do that on Saturday, and we will be the first. And Swindon won't do it until they've also played Harrogate, because they were relegated last season.
So you've been disappeared, haven't you?
Yeah,
that's what's happened.
Maybe I'm being oversensitive.
Like Trotsky.
Yeah, but it feels like we're being willfully ignored, like, you know, Stalinist revisionism.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the Guardian's already mentally written us off, even though we're only four straight defeats in. So, you know, what chance do we have?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely rubbish.
But, you know, how are things in the heady heights of the top end of the championship?
Well, you see, now, this, the trouble is, so we won the first game of the season for the first time, I think, since about 1952. and I have to be very quiet because we're doing quite well. And I want to go and hide somewhere so that I don't wake up the bad things that are going to happen.
The table legs would. Touch that.
Yeah. So really, I don't want to talk about it, but it's kind of been all right. And on Saturday, we actually scored a really, really, really good goal, which is amazing because they'd shut my lucky turnstile, which I was looking at it and I was thinking, oh no, I've got to go through one of the other turnstiles. And I was actually paused there thinking about it. And then this man came up behind me, a young man, and said, oh no, I've got to go through Dad's unlucky turnstile. And it wasn't my son.
But this is how you find out whether another turnstile is lucky or not.
Well, exactly.
You know? And then
so,
you've got more information going forward.
Well, my unlucky turnstile is now my lucky turnstile. So, you know, there's the big news in the Hancock household.
Excellent. Good. Well, so the season's underway properly. We've entered a brave new world where West Ham can be top of the league.
Yes.
Who thought such a thing was possible?
Well, you told me this. I wasn't even aware that West Ham had never topped the top division.
Or is it the
Premier League?
No, I think once, 15 years ago, I think it was during the commentary of the towards the end of the game on Monday night, they said they'd been top once 15 years ago. So it predates...
But is this Sky? So it may well be the Premier League.
It would be the Premier League, Well, that was the big thing that they did on Monday night, was they made a huge fuss over Mikel Antonio reaching 49 goals, which made him West Ham's top Premier League goalscorer. Yes. What sort of a record is that? Because you think Jeff Hurst, lovely Jeff
doesn't
Hurst,
count.
180 goals in the First Division, mm-hmm. and 30 for Stoke.
Yeah.
And you know, and doesn't count. Yeah. Vic Watson, their actual record goal scorer, 205 goals in the First Division.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
But
because history started in 1992.
Yes, well, exactly. Which we have said before. But actually, I have to say, I like Mikel Antonio.
Oh, yeah.
And I liked him when he was at Forest. And I like him now. And
he was a very very good performance on Monday. I mean, he was a brilliant centre-forward thing. Two brilliant goals, brilliant assist. And one of the craziest goal celebrations you'll ever see. Ran over to the bench, picked up a life-size cardboard cutout of himself, lifted it up in the air, gazing adoringly into its cardboard eyes. I mean, it was rather unsettling, to be honest.
Well, I didn't see this, but no.
And afterwards, he said in an interview with Carragher and Neville and the guy who presents it, said, "Did you get it? Did you get what it was supposed to be?" And none of them did.
What was it?
And he claimed that he was doing a recreation of an iconic moment from the film Save the Last Dance for Me, and he meant Dirty Dancing. Save the Last Dance for Me is a different film. It's a similar storyline. I'm not saying it's not, but Dirty Dancing is the one where Patrick Swayze lifts the girl up and that's the climax.
That's what he was doing.
And that's what he was doing. But I don't think he'd thought this through at all. I mean, if you're making out in front of thousands of people with a cardboard cutout of yourself, I'm not sure that's a good look.
No.
At all. And also, if there was a picture on the back, rather than just plain white. You know, if he'd got a cardboard cutout that had the back of his shirt with his name on it, people would have known what the hell was going on. But only he could see the picture.
Yeah.
He was holding it up, so only he could see the picture. No one knew what the hell was going on until he threw it away.
Well, conceivably, the back, if it was all white, was available for advertising.
Available advertising space.
What I liked about it, because you told me about it, and obviously I haven't seen it, was the amount of points at which, before this happened, he could have stopped it. So, first of all, he's thought of it. That is strange.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stop it now.
Yeah. Then he suggested it to somebody else who's clearly backed him up.
Yeah, don't do that, Mikel.
No. Then he's got the cutout made.
Okay. I'm really, really hoping that it was just for advertising purposes and already existed in the club shop.
Oh, it was in the club shop. Okay.
And that he didn't go to Prontoprint and get it done.
But it goes on. I'd like him to have gone to Prontoprint. Yeah. The other thing is, because someone had to hand it to him.
Yeah,
right?
It was the reserve goalkeeper.
So therefore, he's had to do a dress rehearsal at some stage.
What I want you to do is this. Also, he did it for the second. He scored two goals, and he did it on the second goal. So I think on the first goal, he might have run over, and the reserve team goalkeeper was going, No,
I haven't got it. I haven't got it.
No, don't do it. It's a bad idea. Don't do it.
Yeah, and also, of course, he has to score a goal, and then he has to do it. And then what I like most about it was that you do it, you hold up the cutout of yourself, which, of course, for another £30, you could have had printing on the back.
Yeah.
But then, when you finished, you've got to go and put it away somewhere.
Yeah. Go the whole hog, you know, get some sort of sex doll, put his face on it.
Well, that's not what I presume was the most likely thing.
I mean, they go to so much trouble to come up with a good goal celebration now.
Yeah,
and you know, the idea that, you know, they could start recreating whole bits of film is quite appealing to me. There was a Spider-Man guy, wasn't there? When we put on a Spider-Man.
There was a mask. So it was an Argentinian or Uruguayan, wasn't he?
Yeah. And there was a Mexican player, wasn't there, who had a Mexican wrestler's mask tucked down his sock for weeks on end in case he scored.
Yeah.
And there was that
bloke who put on the kilt. That may have been a tiger, actually. I don't know.
Was that an episode of Billy's Boots?
Yes, something like that. But go on. Sorry, we were going to say.
There was Robbie Keane did a thing, didn't he, where he would roll and then do a bow and arrow thing.
Yes,
around about the time of the Robin Hood thing.
He did shooting as well, didn't he? The pistol packing mama thing. Yeah, that's
sort of
thing.
No, I think that might have been someone else. I think Robbie Keane in the World Cup in Japan was doing the rolling and then bow and arrow thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think why not act out whole scenes with dialogue? dialogue.
I think it's a good idea.
Get a team to shout at you, did you order a Code Red? And shout back, you're goddamn right I did. And I think I would love it if someone celebrated a goal doing that. And you know, there was that dentist chair, wasn't there? The dentist chair thing in 96 with Gazza.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I think how much better that would have been if Teddy Sheringham had been alongside him, just whispering in his ear, is it safe?
Is it safe? Yeah, absolutely. I like the idea of football being combined with film improv.
Yes, exactly. Film recreation improv.
And Jack, we will get off the subject in a minute. But there's of course the T-shirts. You know, which are often very sad and about maybe somebody who's been ill or
sometimes they're about the. Why is it always me?
Why is it always me?
It's because you're a bit of a twist.
But again, Balotelli, of course. Yeah. But again. A bit like you say about Michael Antonio going to Pronto Print.
Yes.
Here's a question. Is it sadder to get the T-shirt printed or to write it yourself?
With a felt pen, with a marker.
The night before the game, Dimitar Berbatov is there writing it out. Or even worse, standing over either his wife or his child and going, no, not like that, not like that. Yeah. Now make that word bigger.
And all, you know, his teammates saying, you know, you've been on a bit of a bad run. That 100 goals shirt you're wearing under your shirt, it's beginning to stink a bit.
It's rank, that is.
It's getting a bit stiff under the arms. Let me get another one.
And one of the most famous ones was Thierry Henry. Arsenal failed to score against Liverpool for, I don't know, some ridiculous number of games. And he had a T-shirt that said, there goes your nil-nil, or something along those lines. And he pulled it off to reveal this, but he scored the second goal. Hmm. So it had, you know, it had gone some time before.
It had gone.
Yeah.
I know. Well, goal celebrations, we shall come to them again.
I think goal celebrations coach is what most of these teams
do. They need that. Well, they've got special throw-in coaches.
They have. At Liverpool, they have.
And inspired by the success that Stoke had all those years ago.
Yeah, and how many teams are now doing that long throw-in? Who used to absolutely give us so much stick? West Brom, of course. West Ham of the Midlands.
And they have a specialist, certainly now.
Yeah, that's all they do.
Most teams have one, don't they?
Yeah. You'd have thought a goal celebration, it's enough, as Barry Davis said. Look at his face! Just look at his face! Well, that's all you need to do.
Yes, well, now, on the rest of the Premiership, there was a noticeable change that has been in the first couple of weeks about how games are being refereed after the Euros. Yep. There was a general sort of air of approval about the refereeing there in that tournament. Not just the different VAR interpretation with the different lines that they're doing now, but also a more sort of laissez-faire attitude about contact, about heavy tackles. Yeah. And apparently the PGMOL offered up new guidelines for referees this season. And that stands for, I know now.
Oh, I was going to say, if you want to know what that stands for, you're going to have to look it up. Because Chris couldn't remember.
I couldn't remember earlier, but it stands for Professional Game Match Officials Limited. So, for once, the L isn't linesman, which I thought it was.
No.
But game and match are pretty much lifting the same weight there, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And why limited?
You can be a game official, you can be a match official. Yeah, but you can be a game match official, you'll turn up for any match, does that mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, so not all managers are quite on board with the new standards that are being set. Jurgen Klopp had a bit of a mouthful about it, didn't he? Saying that it had set football back 10 or 15 years.
Yes, which is incredibly melodramatic, isn't it?
It is. But actually, you know, I think arguably it's the clock, if the clock is being reset, the calendar rather, is being reset at all, it's being reset to the start of the Arsene Wenger era. Because Wenger was the one, wasn't he, who was credited with introducing a more modern football. And if you want this modern football, you have to adjust your game. You have to protect the players who play it.
Yes.
And because he'd had success and everybody liked how Arsenal were playing, he had a lot of weight in his first sort of in his first few years. And a lot of changes were kind of not directly maybe, but under pressure from him.
Let's be honest. No. Briefly, Arsene Wenger was a breath of fresh air.
Briefly, yes.
Later on, he stank the place out. But yes, early on,
he was a breath of fresh
liked
air.
Liked him,
and then for 20 more years, he was a slightly musty librarian.
Yeah, with halitosis.
But Solskjaer also was complaining about the new refereeing standard, and part of you thinks, as Gary Lineker said on Match of the Day, that what they're trying to do is put a little bit of subliminal pressure on referees not to do this so much in their games to let to protect their players because they don't want to have an argument with Jurgen Klopp. They want his autograph. You know, that's what referees want, isn't it? They want.
Oh, well, yes. And basically, anything a manager says in a post-match interview is a subliminal way.
Anything is game. Everything is gamesmanship, unless it's Steve Bruce doing it. Because Steve Bruce has a more or less constant air of not quite knowing what the hell's going on.
Yes,
he had the most interesting complaint, I thought, at the weekend about the new refereeing, saying after Callum Wilson was caught offside, and then it would have been a penalty if play had been allowed to go on, and they pulled it back, and he was offside. And Steve Bruce said, I thought we weren't doing armpits anymore. And when you look at the offside that he was complaining about, the armpit was on the defender's armpit, and not Callum Wilson was like a clear foot ahead of
him. Yeah.
And it's like he hadn't quite got what it was he was complaining about.
But just on the whole player protection thing, okay, and what it was brought about because of, yes, so it's meant to protect the players, and so therefore the game would flow more.
Yeah.
But in fact, the game flows an awful lot less
and because players know they can get it stopped.
Yes. And so the more and more free kicks, and also, you know, the worst one, this could potentially save a player's life if there's a head injury we have to stop.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do they do? They all pretend they have head injuries, which I think is so awful when you think what it is about. And also the players, they love it when the game stops. You know, they have a little wander around. They might go and get some water.
They might get some drink.
They like little breakout meetings all over the ground.
Yeah,
they nip over to
the bench and get the cardboard cutout ready.
Yeah,
just in case.
Yeah, and you know, and a booking is a good 5 minutes, isn't it?
There's
an official appeals process that happens on the pitch,
and you don't get the added time, which I discovered on Monday is now apparently not called added time anymore. It wasn't called added. It was called added time when it was no longer called injury time.
Yes.
And now apparently it's called lost time.
Oh, is it?
Lost time is the new
phrase.
Oh, my
word. Could we have that in life? Actually, no. No, I spend my life trying to lose time.
It's all lost time, well, frankly.
So I think the refereeing thing has been generally well received.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, the only things... What I would really like to see, and this is my suggestion for football in general, neutral physios. Okay? So physios, you can come and go, there's nothing wrong with him. If you have a physio from the same team, that's wrong. And also, if
because they're complicit in whatever gamesmanship is going on.
Of course they are. And you know, and in rugby, they go on and actually cut somebody's face with a razor blade.
Yes, under the thumbnail.
But the other thing is, wouldn't it be great if they actually had those Star Trek tricorders where they could tell you immediately if he'd been injured?
Where the VAR ref could tell you immediately.
Yeah,
instant X-ray.
And then if you're not injured, you get sent off. Was it you that was telling me the story about? I mean, because diving is now one of the skills that a footballer should have.
Or
if he doesn't go down, that's thought to be very bad. Was it you that telling me about Souness and Micah Richards?
No.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay, so there's. It might have been Tim Lovejoy last week.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a player goes down and Micah Richards is talking about it after the game, and he says he's been really clever there because, you know, if he stays on his feet, he's probably not going to be able to get a shot away.
Yeah.
He's gone down, he's won a penalty. That's clever play.
Yeah.
And Souness just goes, but that's cheating, isn't it? and there, in a nutshell, are the different approaches of different eras.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in the 70s, of course, I mean, you had players whose nicknames were things like Chopper Harris
or Bites Norman, Your Legs.
Yeah. Norman Bites Your Legs, yeah. And in the 70s, you know, there were very few bookings because basically, generally, players went straight to the red card incident, even though there wasn't a red card. And I'm fairly sure you could take the pitch in a First Division Premier League match with a handgun and not be booked.
You'd have to have a warning first, probably.
Yes, probably,
before you actually used it. I think this, generally speaking, the change in attitude of refereeing after the Euros is a pleasing sort of reversal.
Absolutely.
And unlike most of the things that happen in football that have changed since I started watching it, it hasn't made it a little bit more shit.
No, but on the Klopp thing, I seem to remember when there were no crowds in, Klopp something about Sheffield United, how it was better for them than it was for Liverpool. But basically, all interviews are, it's not fair, yeah, by all managers. They may as well just come on and say, it's not fair.
Yeah. If it was, God help us, a level playing field, what would that be like?
Yeah, you know? That would be awful.
Yeah, it would be awful. I like the, on the subject of refereeing, I like the story from a couple of years ago when Guardiola came out and was complaining about a heavy tackle on, I think it was Leroy Sané at the time.
Right.
And it was a heavy tackle and he had to go off, but he was injured for like 2 or 3 weeks, that's all. It wasn't like a life-threatening, career-ending injury. Yeah. And Neil Warnock said, you're in England now. And Neil Warnock was the manager of Cardiff, and they were playing in Cardiff.
I'm hoping that somebody just whispered in his ear.
Yeah. No, Neil, you've forgotten which club you're the manager of.
You know, you're saying that the crowd aren't really behind you. This won't help.
This
Neil.
Isn't going to help.
It's not going to help. No.
And it's basically Guardiola saying, please, you know, I've come up with a plan to beat you all, buying all the best players. You know, don't come up with a way to counteract it.
Yeah.
That's not fair. Anyway, on from that. There's also been this week, because when we were talking last week, it looked like Harry Kane was going to agitate his way out of Spurs over to Manchester City.
Yeah.
And he seems to have given up on that now. And last week it was Kane's leaving and Guardiola wants him. And this week it's Kane staying and maybe Guardiola's leaving.
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to be manager for a couple of years and then I'm going to take a break. And then I might go into international management. Who knows what I might do?
Yes. You know? It does smack of somebody not getting their own way walking out a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, a little bit. For both of them, really, and they're reacting slightly differently to both not getting their own way. And they're men who are used to getting their own way.
Yes, absolutely.
Kane and Guardiola. But I think I can't understand. I can't understand the Harry Kane wanting to leave Spurs. I think if you're a footballer, if I was a footballer, the money seems to be so. There's so much money.
Yeah.
How is it can't continue to be a relevant factor.
But isn't in this case, is it not the trophies?
But the thing is, what I would say to you is, look at Manchester City.
Yeah.
They were the runners-up in the Champions League this last time.
Yeah.
2 years ago, Harry Kane was the runner-up in the Champions League with Tottenham. You know, and if they'd won the Champions League with Tottenham, that would be... That would be 10 times more impressive than winning it with Manchester City.
Well, it would be, but also you have to remember that was 3 managers ago for Harry Kane.
Well, I guess.
Which Guardiola is still there.
Yeah, but I think there's trophies, but there's also making yourself, an icon within that.
Oh, well, yes, I mean, absolutely. So if Matthew Letizia, Steve Ball, the phrase used to be the one club men.
The one club dinosaur. Yeah, Tony Adams. Yeah.
Dennis Smith.
Yeah, Ryan Giggs.
Jimmy Dickinson.
Okay.
Portsmouth. Anyway, we could go on.
and perhaps we shouldn't. And the other little news thing was that the so-called Super League breakaway clubs have been fined £22 million between them, which is next to nothing, and told not to do it again, not to do it again, or else they'll lose 30 points, which will really... That would really upset them.
Well, the points deduction has always been the thing that they finally balk at, unless it's somebody like Swindon, where they can get away with it years and years ago. And they'll never go there. They will never go there. And so 20 million, as you say, is a bit part under 23's league player, isn't it, for them?
Yeah, it's a reserve player for the top clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now when there's a big fine, I'm always interested to know, because it's very, very rarely made clear, where the money's going to go.
Yeah.
They take 22 million off them. What are they going to do with it?
Yeah.
You football administrators, you transparent, you squeaky clean fellas.
Yes.
And the phrase is money to go towards the good of the game. Mm. The good of the game.
Yeah.
Who's deciding what that is?
Well, they are. And we've seen what's happened there.
Yeah, yeah. Are they monitoring the good of the game? Is there a level that we can increase? I like it when they do a big TV deal to the Premier League and it says that. Yeah, for billions of pounds, and £50 million has been earmarked for grassroots projects.
Yeah.
And you say, what are these grassroots projects? And you look at the detail, and it's 50 artificial pitches. And In my mind, you shouldn't be calling those grassroots projects because they're not, are they? There's no grass. They should be like extruded polymer projects. They should be.
But when I see that, the word that strikes me is earmarked.
Yeah.
Which means not given, not yet,
not spent,
and possibly never.
Yeah. This is what we're planning to do.
Yeah.
But if something comes up, you never know.
Yeah. It's the social housing, and and some of it's earmarked for social housing. It won't happen, but it's earmarked.
Yeah. Anyway. Moving on, this is the thing that has caught my eye this week that I want to talk about. It's this thing, Socios. You've come across this at all? It was news to me this week. Apparently, it's been around for a couple of years.
A couple of years, yeah.
But in a background sort of way, Socios is, God help us, a fan platform which sells fan tokens, offering supporters the chance to influence decision making at their team. I mean, can you? You believe that? It has made some high-profile partnerships this summer, including Arsenal and Manchester City. They're Inter Milan's shirt sponsors, and the Argentinian top division is now called Torneo Socios, apparently. So what the hell is it? I mean, it's owned by Chili's, which is the cryptocurrency you have to use to buy the token.
Right, okay.
So you have to get into the cryptocurrency that this company, flogs.
Propagates.
Yeah, if a good word, yeah. Me either. And the idea is, these tokens, you can trade these things. You get enough of them, you can trade them, and their value will apparently go up and down according to, I don't know what the hell they go up and down according to. Apparently the PSG one went up in value around the time they signed Lionel Messi. But this was principally because of some desperate pushing by traders on social media. And then the price crashed because the price going up wasn't actually based on anything.
On anything at all.
But
just, I mean, now I've looked into it because you said about it, and it really, I have to say, genuinely, it is quite frightening.
Yeah.
To me, how it's allowed, God alone knows, and we come back to the guardians of the game here. So it is saying, right, you can pay this money into the club, and you will be able to influence. Now, this, to make it clear, this is not Ebbsfleet. When Ebbsfleet did the thing where you could buy into the club and you could help pick the team, voting.
Yeah.
So it's not that. One. Two, it's for the already extremely rich clubs that have gone into financial mismanagement because of themselves.
Yeah, because they want to find a way of, and this is the word that is so depressingly cynical, they want to find a way to monetize the 99% of fans that are not in the stadium. And what they mean principally is what the guy says, who's organising this, says, we're not targeting the guy who has a tattoo and is a season ticket holder.
Ooh!
Our clients are the guys who will most likely never go to the stadium and yet dream about the team, but were born in Korea, Japan, Turkey or Brazil. Not acknowledging them is discrimination.
Yeah.
I mean, is there? I don't think I've ever heard anyone connected with football use a phrase so dripping with contempt.
No, it is.
As we're not targeting the guy who has a tattoo and a season ticket holder.
And the use of monetizing those people is
makes your skin crawl, doesn't it?
Horrible. So one of the things I was reading, one of the things that you can do, listen to this for the influence, is. And bear in mind, these are people in Brazil, wasn't it? Indonesia,
Brazil,
blah, blah, blah.
And Japan,
okay.
Yeah.
One of the things you can do is influence the playlist before the game.
Yeah, and these are the 99% of fans that are not in the stadium.
The
So they can influence the playlist in the stadium on a match day for the other 1%.
It's a bit like saying, look, I'm really sorry, you're not invited to the wedding, but if you give me 500 quid, you can choose one of the hymns.
Yeah, Band of Gold. We play Band of Gold.
And also what I love about this is, this is not understanding how fans work. So, if you're a Tottenham fan, you can buy loads between you of things for Arsenal, and you can have Nice One Cyril played every single time.
Or, at what level can they possibly influence anything? I mean, the only thing, I looked on their website and looked at various articles about this. The only two things that I see mentioned as things you can influence are that, choosing the songs on the playlist at the stadium, which is just rubbish, and renaming the training ground.
Well, you see, and that is exactly it. And the other thing, the other really big, whacking great thing it hits me with is it's saying fans don't have any influence, but we can give it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because while we are making this plan for you to be able to influence the playlist before the game, we're setting up a European Super League, we're not telling you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what it reminds me of is like, it's Homer Simpson buying Itchy and Scratchy money at Itchy and Scratchy Land. And the woman there saying, it's just like regular money, except it's fun. And then when he gets inside, there are signs everywhere saying, we do not accept Itchy and Scratchy money.
Yeah, but the main thing is it's because of their financial mismanagement. So it's like going into Tesco, OK, and them saying, look, we really appreciate your loyalty to us and for you buying all your shopping here. If you give us £500, because we've had a bit of a bad year, you may be able to decide where the condiments aisle goes.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't do it, would you?
I found some reviews of this Socios thing, one of which, well, one star, useless and pointless, there is no engagement with the club. One star, home of fan influence, home of my arse. Oh, hang on, here's Kenneth. Easy to use, !! Being a fan and having such tokens is really amazing, !! Hoping for the best value of these tokens in the future. Yeah. And Kenneth, I think, has got himself a job at Socios.
Is that good enough, bro?
Exactly.
Anyway, we're going to have to stop on that one, because we could go on and on and talk about club.
But keep an eye out for it, because it's a terrifyingly cynical thing.
It is, and Socios, it's like Smirsch or Spectre or something like that.
Yeah. Or the Torex Foundation, who used to sponsor Oldham's shirts. It sounded like they were going to kill you.
Our guest today, quite apart from being one of the nicest, funniest people on earth, is a Crystal Palace fan with a family tree that sprouts football. She's on the show despite fearing that women are on a hiding to nothing when talking about football. So strong is the desire to get them to fail. Starting in comedy, when some people still believe that women couldn't be funny, she's already seen, indeed helped, opinions change. Let's hope that the current bunch of female pundits have the same success. Today, the famous sloping pitch is right on trend following all the big broadcasts. Please welcome our guest, unfunny token woman, Jo Brand.
Thanks.
I couldn't get away with that with anybody else, but I knew you'd be all right.
Well, I was in a pub once years ago, and this bloke just said to me, "Who do you support?" And I said, "Crystal Palace." And he went, "Who's their manager?"
Oh,
I didn't realise this was a quiz. Is it Cliff Richard? God's sake. Yeah,
it is an interesting thing that when you said it to me when we first talked about you possibly doing this, and you said, oh, you know, it is difficult because either way, if you say too much, they'll go, well, they should be boning up on that just to prove that you do. Or if you say something slightly out, then, well, see, that just shouldn't be allowed.
I know. Can't win. But that's the life of ladies for you there, guys.
It sounds like it. God bless them. I know your family, you were telling me, has quite strong footballing links, doesn't it? Quite apart from you.
Well, yes, because obviously when I was a lad, both my brothers played football, but I wasn't allowed because girls didn't then, back in 1841. Anyway, I would have quite fancied it. I think obviously we did all have the genes because my brother, Bill, my older brother, he had trials for West Ham and Chelsea when he was about 13. And they said to him, you're too small and you're a bit injury prone, but come back in 6 months when you've grown a bit and we'll have another look at you. And sadly, at the time, my dad was suffering really severely from depression and he just never took him back again.
Oh.
So that was the end of his football career.
Yeah.
And he has 5 kids. The oldest is the coach manager of Eastbourne Town, bless him.
Is he?
Yeah, he used to be player manager, but he had a really terrible injury a couple of years ago, so he didn't really play too ferociously anymore.
No.
The next one down, Dan, he was a fantastic footballer when he was a teenager, and he and Gareth Barry were good mates, and they played sort of for the same team. They played for the South East Coast team. And my brother told me this story, and I think this is what went wrong with Dan, because him and Gareth were playing in a semi-final of something, and they lost 3-1. And Bill, my brother, was waiting for them to come out after they got showered and everything. And out they came, and Gareth Barry looked absolutely gutted, as if the worst thing in the world had happened. And my nephew Dan went to my brother, what are we going to do now, Dad?
I think that's right. You know, I think it's one of the phrases they hate to hear in academies is, I'm just glad to be here. To tell you the honest truth, have a kick around. It's great fun.
It's not really a world, is it, where it's good enough just to be taking part?
No, absolutely not.
No, absolutely. And my niece Beck, similarly, really good footballer, used to play in the boys' team, the only girl, because, again, they didn't have women's teams then. And she played for England under-17s, then under-19s, had a few European games.
Right.
And then just thought, is this really what I want to do with my life? And she thought, no, that's not what I'm
What's she doing now?
Well, she is. She actually works kind of in the media. She was working for a long time at Women in Film and Television.
Right.
And she's living in Italy now, so she's having a very nice time.
So football's lost is Italy's
game. She does
game.
Still play, though.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she does, yeah.
Oh, right. Who does she play for over there?
Well, I don't know. I think it's not a kind of, not a big
top professional team.
But I just think the women's football in Italy is ahead of here, though, isn't it? It was a bigger thing, a bigger deal in Italy than it was here until the England team started doing well in the Women's World Cup. And in the Olympics in 2012, I think people started noticing women's football a lot more after that.
Well, it was put on television, is the bottom line.
That's when I notice things, when they're on the television.
Yes.
Can I just say, I remember you telling me ages ago about how popular women's football was.
Yes, during the First World War.
And, because all the men weren't there to play. So.
Yeah, and so they used to have these women's games, and they used to just get packed out, I mean, like 40,000, 45,000 crowds, and a very famous team, Dick Kerr's team, which was based in Preston, and it got banned because the FA decided it was a little bit frightening and they didn't want it. Well, you know, once the men had come back. And so, in effect...
That's terrible, though, isn't it?
It's absolutely terrible. I mean, it was banned in that you can't ban people from playing football, but what they said was, if you're going to call it a match refereed under our rules, you can't do that. Hmm. So it was just an absolutely
That's
terrible thing.
It then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. In fact, I've got a little figurine of a Stoke ladies, 1927 winners of the World Cup, which I think they could call it.
Why did you keep that?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's dead old. Why don't you throw that out? What use is a figurine? It's no use at all. So now, Crystal Palace, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the match experience. Let's talk about why Crystal Palace, first of all.
Well, when I first moved up to London, when I was 20 to train as a nurse, I actually lived in Thornton Heath.
Oh, right.
Obviously, it's very close by. Mm-hmm. And so I used to go to a few games, and I had a group of friends who were called The Family, and they're an extremely badly behaved group of mainly men whose hobby was getting so drunk that they fell asleep, went to the end of the tube line and stayed there all night and then came back in the morning. That's what they were like.
Right, hang around outside my house? They sound very familiar.
I have asked them to.
And it was just The Family, not the Manson family, wasn't it?
It wasn't the Manson family.
Okay,
so
They never copyrighted that name, though. So, you know.
I have to say, I loved going to games then because my abiding memory, not of the team, but my abiding memory was how brilliant the crowd was and just how funny and how absolutely sweary and rude. Yeah. And, I now when I go, I get put in the, in inverted commas, slightly posh bit. So everyone's kind of behaving themselves.
Yes.
And it's a bit of a shame, really. And you seem to get better pies back then as well.
Well, and standing as well, of course, which makes
absolutely
a big difference, I think. We played Palace on Boxing Day one year when we were having a terrible, terrible run. And I remember I went to Palace and there were only about 40 Stoke fans. There may have been a few more. And my favourite sight was turning around to find 8 Stoke fans on the terracing at Crystal Palace playing cards, sitting down, not looking at the game at all and playing cards. Just fantastic thing.
I like the thought of that.
Yeah, it's very, very good. Talking about things you hear in the stadium and the chants and all that, Frank Skinner told me a fantastic story about being at West Brom. And he said, because this wasn't somebody being really loud, this was somebody just saying something barely audible. So what happened was, it was right at the end of the game, thank you for coming. Visiting supporters, please stay in. If there's a Mr. S. Jones or Steve Jones, just to let you know, your wife's just given birth to a baby, which is, okay, in itself, quite frightening. And there was this old bloke walking down the steps as you're going out behind him. And the old bloke said, this is the old bloke's reaction to the birth of a baby. He said, poor sod, he's had to watch that shit now. He's got to go home and make his own tea.
The brotherhood.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. What about... I mean, I don't know whether you've read a lot about this, and it's something that's cropped up a lot in things I've been looking at is the sort of ambivalent, barely contained antipathy towards the rash, for want of a better word, of female pundits, and the fact that you get a lot of commentators and pundits now, the ex-England players that have become famous during the Olympics and the World Cup and things like that. But there's a terrible sniffiness about it.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And I think there are a huge numbers of, let's kindly call them traditional men, who are racist and misogynist as well.
Yes.
And... I don't want to name drop here, but I was chatting to Jamie Redknapp recently, and he was telling me that when he was at the Italy-England final, because I said, oh, was there like a sort of sizable minority of troublemakers? He went, it was about 97%. And he said that the whole stadium was just like so frightening in terms of the sort of fans that were in there. And it's very difficult to tell with social media the sort of abuse that women get online. You know, is it 20 blokes working very hard, or is it kind of 55,000? You just don't know, do
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. And actually, it's interesting you should bring up the two things, because it's like, well, because they're so bad at doing it anyway, the FA would be going, well, we can't deal with sexism, we're dealing with racism at the moment and not doing a very good job.
What do you want us to do? Both knees? Is that what you want?
How many knees can we have?
I've tried on your knees with my husband, that works pretty well.
But I was at the Euro final again,
and you were in the 3%.
Of course, I was in the 3%. I was there with my son. Yeah. But outside, I mean, it was seething with
hatred.
Yeah, some hatred, and a lot of barely concealed aggression. But I was quite glad, because I could say to my son, see, this is what it was like when I used to go a lot of football.
I know, it certainly felt like that to me as
yeah.
well.
Oh, it felt like a throwback, didn't it, the whole thing?
Oh, it really, really did.
I remember when Clive Allen left Palace and went to Villa, and I didn't go to away games because I was too scared, really. And that's one of the few I went to, and it was terrifying. That thing, that weird thing that sounds like it's not true, but the thing, if you lift your feet off the ground, you just get moved somewhere.
Yeah,
do you know what
yeah.
I mean? Because it was so tightly packed
and
so kind of ferocious.
Yes.
And obviously the Palace fans were very glad to see Clive when he ran along and scored. Delighted for you. Good luck in your new club. Yeah.
I don't remember him going to Villa, but there you go. We'll take that on board.
We might have gone to... Oh, God, now I see.
I know, that's why I wanted...
Brain fog.
He went to Arsenal for about 20 minutes.
That's exactly right. He went to QPR, but via Arsenal.
Yeah,
strangely, wasn't it? Yeah.
Liam Wright went to Arsenal. That was a
blow. Of course, yes, he did.
And then relegated you, didn't he, in 1993? And Oldham stayed up at Palace's expense on the last day.
We're used to putting up with that shit.
Yeah. And I live very close to Crystal Palace and was able to go to a pub and celebrate Oldham staying up very close to Sellers Park.
Yes.
But still.
Yeah. But so on that sort of painful nostalgia of the aggression and the seething...
Well, also, this may not go in also, but I also remember very well going to see Palace one day with the family, and afterwards we went for a curry, and the team were in there having a curry, and they were so racist towards the waiters.
Really?
It was really unpleasant. And, like, I do try to keep quiet when I might get punched, but I just couldn't help myself. I just stood up and said, how dare you speak to me? You can imagine the response I got. It was like a kind of, comedy store... sort of late show Friday night, except not quite so articulate, and that was fuck off, you fat cow. So anyway, yeah, it was grim in those days, I think.
Yes, I think it was grim, and things have changed. But what I was going to ask was, but how do you feel about the new sort of slightly heavy sell football, the fact that it's everywhere, the fact that everybody has an opinion and all of those things? Does that does that bother you?
Well, I heard you talking about, I still don't know how to pronounce it.
Socios.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think those sort of money-making things are kind of very cynical, really. And I think that the big spread is actually down to a money thing, isn't it? I mean, I was gutted when Sky... Hello, Rupert. When Sky kind of got involved,
and the
money started to get much bigger. And basically, it separated off the Premiership from, you know... I don't tell anyone this, but I quite liked it when Palace was in... in League One, because it kind of felt, I don't know, just not quite so.
Did it feel
in
more
your
real? Did it? I mean, you know, there's such a distance between the Premiership players and the Premiership clubs and the people who are watching. It's got bigger and bigger, the distance between.
Oh gosh, yes.
And the people who are watching them at home, it's show business. The connection is gone. But lower down the league, there's maybe more of that remaining.
Yeah, I did get the app actually just to see. Socios. Like. Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Yeah, and I scrolled through, and Palace wasn't on there. So I deleted it. No, but I just wanted to have a look. And like you said, you know, you have the opportunity to choose.
Yeah.
Like songs.
I know, but there's something funny about that, isn't there? Getting Inter Milan to play, I don't know, all around your hat.
Well, yes, no, that would be good. When I got married as well, I actually asked if we could have Abide With Me, and the vicar said, you can't have that, that's a funeral hymn. And I went, oh, it's my favourite hymn. And he went, all right then.
Yeah, all right,
and then
yeah.
I said, can we have For Those in Peril on the Sea? Because that's my second favourite. And he went, no.
What was it you were telling me about your sisters?
My sisters went... The disco at my sister's wedding. The young lad put on... The first thing he put on was Band of Gold. Yeah. All I Have Left is a Band of Gold. And I was reminiscing about this with my other sister just recently. And I've always remembered Band of Gold, thinking what a tremendously inappropriate song that is to start a wedding with. And she said they were all that. They were all breakup songs. He played Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. He played I Will Survive.
Young Hearts Run Free. What's the Use in Sharing This One and Only Life? Yeah. And Ending Up as Just Another Lost and Lonely Wife.
Lost and Lonely Wife, absolutely. All I have left is a Band of Gold, of the dreams I hold.
It's nice to anticipate a not too happy future, isn't
Yes, it is. Yeah, well, you know...
Well, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the DJ's going to say, well, you're all saying it's not going to last. I heard you.
All my husband Burns' mates are Palace fans, and his dad was a really devoted Palace fan, yet he's a Tottenham fan. I don't know what happened there, and I'm a Palace fan. But a long, long time ago in the 70s, his dad Dennis used to go religiously every time they were playing at home. And one day he was setting off to the match, and Burns' mum said to him, you look really scruffy, put something nice on. So, for God's sake, so he put a blazer on with like really nice brass buttons. And he was waiting by the team coach for all the Leeds players to get off. And as they got off the coach, they saw him and they thought he was some sort of official.
A concierge.
He had such a smart blazer on. And they all got off the coach and shook his hand one by one. You know, Charlton, Billy Bremner. He said it was like one of the favourite days of his life. He just absolutely loved it. I always thought a sweet little story.
Yeah, that is a lovely, lovely story. Joe, thanks so much for coming on and doing that, especially as you say, you're on a hiding to nothing.
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. Please write to me and say nice things. No, I didn't mean that.
Yes, and on that subject, we haven't had any emails sent to our email address, so sadly that means that we're going to have to actually make up our own programme rather than, like other podcasts, just read out other people's views throughout. Trust me, if you send in your views, we'll use them because we're lazy. Okay, well, that's it from the Famous Sloping Pitch. We will be back with another one when we can persuade a new guest to come on.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.